Hello, this is Robert Noya, Editor-in-Chief of Sky and Telescope Magazine. I am on the phone with Scott Bolton of the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. Dr. Bolton is the principal investigator of NASA's Juno mission, which will arrive at Jupiter in July 2016 to probe the giant planet's atmosphere and internal structure. Dr. Bolton, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to all your audience about Juno.
First of all, I want to thank you and your team for choosing what I think, at least, is a highly appropriate name for the mission based on mythology and not choosing a hokey acronym. How was the name Juno selected?
Well, it's funny you mention that. We started off with contest among the team. And everybody had a chance to put in their favorite name, and a lot of them were acronyms. And it turned out really nobody really liked the other people's choices. We hadn't come up with anything that was really good. And then a friend of mine that is now on part of the team but wasn't affiliated with us at the time was a mythology buff, and he was a colleague of mine from JPL. And I sent him a message saying, you know, we're having trouble with the name. He knew all about Juno and sent me this story about Juno approaching Jupiter and him casting a veil of clouds around himself. And Juno came down and was able to use her powers to see through the clouds and see what Jupiter was up to and understand its true nature. As soon as we saw that story, I sent it out to my team and everybody loved it. And that was it. The name was chosen.
What are your feelings as launch approaches?
Well, launch is just a few weeks away, and it's really exciting to see everything coming together. Of course, we're all incredibly busy doing the final preparations. The spacecraft is finally fueled, and it's getting ready to go and become what's called encapsulated into the payload fairing on top of the rocket. And it's exciting, but also tense, because we're also going through all these final reviews and getting everything ready and making sure that everything works and is tested just the way we want.
Now, a lot of NASA interplanetary and astronomy missions exceed their budget, sometimes by substantial amounts, and they fall far behind schedule. But as we mentioned in the article, Juno was built on schedule and on budget. How did your team accomplish that, and what could other mission teams learn from your team's success?
Well, the first thing is the team is an excellent team, and everybody works really well together. So the first really plus that helps you with this kind of a challenge is a team that communicates well and works well together, and there's very little tension between the engineers and the scientists. The second thing is we designed the mission to have very low risk, and so we tried to identify the risks up front, and we also tried to design it in a way that simplified things. We only took on complexity when we absolutely had to. And even then, we tried to minimize the development risk. And I think all of those go into helping you mitigate the risk and control it, which helps you control the budget and the schedule, which are the two biggest risks in any mission.
One thing I find really interesting about this mission is that your team decided to use solar arrays rather than nuclear power to power the spacecraft's instruments and systems. This is the first NASA mission to the outer solar system to use solar power. What led you to that decision, and what challenges did this decision present to you and your team?
Well, in fact, it fits into your previous question, because we chose solar power because we decided it was lower risk. And the reason it was lower risk is the alternative is nuclear, an RTG, and there weren't any RTGs available. And so a new one would have had to be developed for Juno to go. And so when we looked at what was possible and the risk associated with developing a new RTG, we decided that we'd take a look and see if solar power could be used, because we knew if that could be used, we'd take off this huge development risk. Instead of developing a brand new RTG, we'd have to look at customizing solar cells so that they were a little more efficient, could handle the radiation and the low temperature. And in fact, we were able to accomplish that. And so the main driver to that was actually to lower the risk and enable us to stay on schedule and on budget.
And one thing, too, that's a very interesting aspect of this mission, but as a major challenge for you and your colleagues, is that Juno will be going through a very harsh radiation environment. And I know the mission objective is to have Juno survive long enough to acquire data for 32 orbits of Jupiter. How confident are you that Juno will be able to survive this environment long enough for 32 orbits worth of data?
Very confident. I mean, we have a lot of margin. We've carefully designed to survive the radiation that we will be exposed to. And we have plenty of margin in that design so that we could even get double the radiation and we'd still survive. And we are going to a very intense region. In fact, it's probably the harshest radiation environment in the entire solar system other than just going directly to the sun. And so we've really designed to accommodate that radiation in a very unique way. We have a vault in the middle of the spacecraft, and it's called a radiation vault, and it's basically a box of titanium. And inside that box is all the sensitive electronics. And so what Juno is very much an armored tank going to Jupiter.
Now, most interior models of Jupiter look pretty much the same from a layman's perspective, and we ran such a diagram in the article showing a typical model. Do you think it's possible that Juno might reveal an internal structure that's completely different from what scientists are expecting?
Absolutely. There's a lot of debate, even among my team, as to what really is inside Jupiter. There's some very fundamental things that we aren't sure of. One is whether there's a core of heavy elements in the center of Jupiter. Our gravity measurements should reveal hints into that, and even a measurement of how big it might be. We don't know how Jupiter rotates inside, whether the beautiful zones and belts that we see are they manifestations of a set of concentric cylinders inside that are all rotating at different speeds and directions, and you're seeing them pop out in the sphere, or is that a skin-deep phenomena, and actually Jupiter's rotating internally like a solid body? So we don't know these questions. Juno will reveal these, and so when you look at a model of the interior, these are fundamental questions people don't really know and aren't really included in the models, or if they are, somebody's made a choice, but they don't really know if they made the correct choice. Another big question is how much water or oxygen is inside Jupiter, and this is a huge question in the interior models because oxygen is the third most abundant element in the universe and even in the sun, so it's hydrogen, helium, and oxygen. And so while we know that Jupiter is mostly hydrogen and helium, not knowing how much oxygen is in there is a major barrier to interior models.
The article also talks about the possibility that Juno will succeed in all of its technical goals, but because there remains a lot of uncertainties about how material behaves at the extremely high temperatures and pressures deep inside Jupiter, that Juno's data might not really give us as much insight as scientists would like about how Jupiter is structured internally. Is that a possibility that concerns you?
No, I don't consider that a concern. It's more of something to look forward to. Juno will measure the state of Jupiter, and that data set will be a fundamental data set that will basically live forever. As we learn more about the equation of state of hydrogen and how things behave at very high pressure, we may go back in and reinterpret Juno's data, and maybe the conclusions will be modified. But the data set will still be valid and will essentially live forever. We already know enough about the equation state that we can see that we're going to learn things from the Juno data set. However, as you say, as we learn more about nature, we'll be able to go back in and actually learn even more about Jupiter.
And what are some of the big questions about Jupiter's upper atmosphere and meteorology that Juno will address?
Well, part of it is just how deep the zones and belts go. We don't really know how deep the roots are, even to the Great Red Spot. We know there's this huge storm been observed for at least 300 years. You would think that maybe something that could last that long must imply it must have pretty deep roots, but we don't really know that. Juno's investigation of the atmosphere, and in fact the deep into the atmosphere, the meteorological layer, will reveal how deep these zones and belts go, what the winds are like really down deep, and this is all in addition, of course, to how it's rotating inside. And so I think these are really key questions that we'd like to know. Another one is, the Galileo probe went into a spot that we think was a very dry, anomalous spot where it didn't measure very much water, and people think it was sort of the Sahara Desert of Jupiter. Juno's investigation of the atmosphere will tell us whether that's common at Jupiter or is it uncommon. I mean, we will be measuring the same kinds of things about as far as how much water and moisture is in Jupiter at many, many places all over the whole planet. And so we'll get an idea of how rare that spot was that Galileo went into.
And one thing, too, I find interesting about Jupiter is that it has this extremely powerful magnetic field, and yet the origin of that field is still not very well understood. And I would think that we'll be getting a lot of information from Juno that will shed light on the origin of that very powerful magnetic field.
That's right. Juno's orbit goes very close to the planet. We have very precise and sensitive magnetometers that measure the magnetic field. And we'll be able to get a nice map of that. And one of the things that's interesting about Jupiter is as you go down into its atmosphere, the pressure is so great that the hydrogen actually becomes like liquid metallic hydrogen, which is a very strange concept. Not only is the hydrogen now behaving like a liquid, but the electrons have been squeezed away, and it's behaving like a metal. It ducts electricity. Of course, somewhere we think is where this is where the magnetic field comes from. The beautiful thing about Jupiter is that it'll be transparent down into that metallic hydrogen region, so we'll be able to understand how that magnetic field is created and what it's like down at the source region. And that's fundamental to learning about the dynamo theory. We can't really do that kind of investigation here on Earth because there are permanently magnetized crust pieces that are in between the observer and the center of the Earth where the magnetic field is being generated. And so we can't actually see down. We're not transparent. And so Juno investigation of Jupiter offers us that first opportunity to really look that closely at a magnetic field without something blocking our view of what's happening at the source region.
And another interesting thing, of course, about Jupiter is that it has a set of moons, especially the four large Galilean moons. And I think it's pretty clear that Juno's primary purpose is to study the planet, but is it possible it'll be able to provide any kind of new information about the moons?
Yes, it will. I mean, our prime focus is, of course, Jupiter, but we're going into this very unique polar orbit. We have very powerful scientific instruments, and we'll be able to look down and probably see some of the moons from above, which is a unique vantage point. And we'll probably learn something about the moons as well as the rings. But we're not focused on that, and we don't currently have planned very, very close flybys of the moons. In fact, we're trying to avoid those to make sure that we don't accidentally crash into them because we want to protect those for future investigation. So while we'll make some progress on the moon studies, we won't be focused on it.
Now, assuming that Juno arrives at Jupiter, survives its 32 orbits, and really teaches us a lot about the planet, can you envision what kind of mission might be contemplated to follow up on Juno's discoveries?
Certainly, when we learn something about from Juno about Jupiter's deep interior, maybe someday we'll want to send down a very, very deep probe. That would take a lot of new technology, however, but I could imagine that would be an interesting step. Another, and maybe even more pressing and more immediate step, would be to do a Juno-like investigation at the other giant planets. Mm. Because what Juno will do will help us understand how Jupiter formed, which was probably the first step in creating the solar system. What you'd like to do is understand Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune in a similar fashion, so that you can start to put together the whole storyline of how the solar system came to be. And so I could see future missions like Juno to those other planets.
Is there anything else that you would like to add about the mission that I did not ask you about?
No, I mean, you know, what Juno's really about is trying to discover the recipe for planet making. And what we're doing is we're starting really at the beginning with the ingredient list and the basic structure. And we do it in an innovative way where we have three different ways of trying to see what's inside, see beneath the cloud, the microwave, the gravity, and the magnetic field. And then, of course, we have a great opportunity to understand the magnetosphere because we're in this beautiful polar orbit. The last thing I'd like to leave your audience with is that you can learn a lot more about Juno if they want by checking out our website, which is missionjuno.swri.edu.
Great. And obviously, I think I speak not only for myself and the staff of Sky and Telescope, but our tens of thousands of readers around the world, that we wish you and your colleagues just tremendous success with this mission.
Well, thank you very much. I hope you guys will be watching us online.